Hello, thanks for tuning in to Freak Radio 101.1 FM Pirate Radio. No sponsorship, no underwriting, just community words and voices talking about struggle and music in between. This is the Out of Control show, and today we'll be speaking with individuals who are organizing students and workers at the University of California in Santa Cruz. We'll be talking live in the studio about the budget crisis and California's education system, its effects on student body, laborers, people of color, and women, its history, and also the pressure that is being put against the UC system to have money put back into education, real education. We also plan on listening to Kevin Padian, Wendy Brown, their words from a presentation in Berkeley, California on why we should generate this pressure to save our schools from privatization and exclusivity. Also, we'll listen to and critique words from Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and UC President Mark Udall. Before that, we'll listen to a song by Nina Simone and then some words by Michael Parenti about race, gender, and class struggle. So first, we'll go to the song by Nina Simone. Thank you for tuning in. Freak Radio. Free Radio. Segue into my guest today, who is going to talk about UC budget cuts, why it sucks, the strike organized by students against these budget cuts, which is to go down March 4th. I think people are going to Sacramento for that. So here's Michael Parenti with a kind of history on race, class, and gender.
what happens in America, and it happens on the left too, by focusing exclusively on race and gender, we forget that there's also a terrible class divide. And we then overlook how class operates in race and gender problems. The growing morbidity differentials in the United States seem to be explained not only by looking at race and gender, but by looking at class. In fact, class is a more strategic factor regardless of race or gender. As the public health expert Vicente Navarro noted, a very fine writer on health policy, Vicente, he should write more. I don't say that about many people on the left, but do of him. Quote, many of the things that are assumed to be characteristic of blacks are in fact characteristic of low income. But the U.S. government collects data only on race and gender while ignoring class. Now, this negligence, I maintain, is not indicative of a lack of class awareness, but of a keen sense of class, a sense of keeping it off the agenda, a sense of keeping it out of our consciousness. We don't deal with class. Equal protection of the law, due process, those always relate to race and gender and other things, not to class. The Supreme Court has made that very clear also. Now, you look at class bigotry, and it resembles race and gender bigotry. The lower classes were always seen as lazy, worthless, visceral, improvident, self-indulgent, morally depraved, criminally inclined, incapable of self-improvement, creatures of impulse and violence, self-victimizing. They were the authors of their own poverty. And, of course, sometimes under very severe economic oppression, There are indeed social pathologies that take over in a way. Now, that image fits the bigot's portrait of various ethnic groups, doesn't it? It also isn't that far from the stereotype of women: weak, flighty, irresponsible, untrustworthy, not competent. In Christianity, you even got women as the evil corruptors and seducers, the Jezebels and the like. Well, Robert Cole, the Harvard psychologist, he did a study. He went and interviewed any number of people. He interviewed African-American families, working families. And he found that these African-American working families had a sense of class power. He found that his respondents would ask him if he also had interviewed, quote, the rich folks. So Robert Cole, being a good mainstream intellectual, liberal and all that, heard the rich folks, and of course, what did he understand? You can't be talking about class. You must mean race. He says, don't you mean the white folks instead of the rich? And they say, no. We mean the rich, the ones who decide how the poor folks live, they would say. One African-American lawyer, now this isn't the working class respondent, this guy was a lawyer, okay, but he's African-American. He says to Cole, if you want to know why black people live the way they do, you ought to talk not to the ordinary working class white people, because they're also victimized, but he suggested that Cole talk to the affluent and powerful people who own the farmlands and the factories. Here's a quote, they own everything and they decide what happens in this city and in all other cities, said this African-American lawyer. It gets even more interesting. Cole interviews white families and they too begin to refer to the rich or the big shots with plenty of money and all the power they want. They didn't start with the usual thing about, oh, the blacks, they're on welfare, they're getting it all, and we're being neglected and all that. They talked about the rich. So Cole's interviewees, mostly working class African Americans and working class whites, were introducing him to the concept of class power. They were taking the famous Harvard professor to school about something that academics and intellectuals in this country have programmed out of their perceptions, even when it hits them right in the face, and that is class power. He was asking working class people questions, but he forgot to ask them about class and class power. In sum, we don't have a full understanding of the functional imperatives of racism and sexism unless we take into account the political economic context. And by the way, my book, The Class Struggle, also argues that there's a political economic context for understanding perception, understanding the dominant paradigm, and understanding culture. Culture is both a dynamic, the outcome of a power situation, and also an instrument of that power. So we should move from attitudinal analyses to institutional and systemic analyses. We should see how class power translates into social and cultural power.
Okay, that was Michael Parenti. In 2006, an excerpt from Race, Gender, and Class Struggle at the Peninsula Peace and Justice Center. So my guests are here. Welcome, everybody. I think first you had something you wanted to talk about, just jumping right into the history.
Oh, sure. I'm Mac. I'm a UCSC alum. And we're going to talk about March 4th and the strike and Day of Action that will be coming up. This day came out of an October 24th conference, a big conglomeration of different unions, K-12, teachers, professors, students, workers from all over the state of California meeting up at Berkeley. And they all decided on a strike/day of action on March 4th. And a couple of demands came out from that we wanted to present to the administration, state of California, and the UC Regents. And I just want to read them off really fast because the UCSC just came up with their demands. And then I want to go to NorCal demands. For UCSC, we broke it up into two categories, one presenting to the UC Regents and the other to the governor. And it's important to distinguish between these two groups of people because the administration and the UC Regents tend to co-opt the movement, saying, putting the blame on the higher up, where the money is coming from or not coming from. But really, it's a conglomeration of local and regional and state and federal issues. First group is towards the state. And the first one is reverse the cuts, layoffs, and fee hikes. So no more cuts to education. Put on progressive taxation on the wealthy and corporations to fix the budget. Fund education and social services, not war and corporate bailouts. And reject the privatization of prisons. And towards the UC, the first one is stop the privatization of schools. Stop the resegregation on campus. So full funding for services and programs that serve students of color and unrepresented communities, and democratize education, so student, teacher, and worker control in the schools, and drop the charges for activists.
Okay. Do you want to introduce yourself?
First and foremost, I always appreciate what Freak Radio does here, pirate radio station, no commercials, way to represent. My name's Jonathan. I'm here with AFSCME. I'm a temporary organizer, and just kind of as well to give some similar demands that was brought up by Mac over here. Actually, if you give me a minute or two, I can give a good list of demands that we'll actually be bringing to Regent Richard Blum, who is quite a big wig, as we'd like to call them, in our neck of the woods. And it would be in regards to some specific demands brought forth with AFSCME, but that actually deal as well with similar issues brought forward with Mac. Yeah, there's actually a meeting today that some AFSCME officials will be having at 2:00, and they will bring forward some pretty dope demands. And they are as follows. I mean, one that would be specific to, you know, privatization. What does that exactly mean? That would be like halting the plans to subcontract. In particular, at University of Berkeley, California Berkeley, 40 workers have been laid off. And rather than rehiring contracted workers or subcontracting this work or contracting out, as like we call it, with an agency, which is an agency that unfortunately does a very poor job. And that is one of their in terms of privatization, their demands would be to halt these subcontracting out that's going on at UC Berkeley with the bus services. A second term within the privatization would be that decision to subcontract. It's called the Labor Bureau of National Logistics. Something. It's a very odd anagram, LBNL. That would be their second demand. It's contingent with the subcontracting that's going out. Over in UCI, there's basically some employees that are with an agency, the ABM, that they want to bring them into the union. And the reason why they want to do this is because unionized workers usually get benefits, pension, overtime protection. This ABM worker is unfortunately similar to what happened in Santa Cruz with Sodexo. They weren't offered any of these benefits. And then lastly, in terms of privatization, they'll be saying to honor Davis's subcontracting agreement for custodians. So what we see in privatization, that University of California is this contingent decision to subcontract out work with ununionized workers, which unfortunately, as we know, people without representation usually get taken advantage of. Secondly, they're going to have, in terms of what has been going on our campuses, which is furloughs, reductions in times, RITs as I'll refer to them. Campus by campus, there's in Davis, there's been a 4-5% reduction in on-campuses to service workers, which are the bus drivers, custodians, dining hall workers, graveyard workers, groundskeepers, shuttle drivers, the list kind of goes on. In Berkeley, there's been also the 4-6% reduction that's gone on to the entire